It's July 14th, 2014, and this is episode 86 of Nitro Free to Play. My name is Brian Polita, and I am joined by Mark Bradshaw. Wait, no, last week was 86. This is episode 87 of Nitro Free to Play. My name is Brian Polita, and I'm joined by Mark Bradshaw.
Guys, I've got an idea. I'm going to start a con. And during this, okay, the big thing this con revolves around is we're going to get a bunch of nerds in a hotel. And then during the con, we're going to say either they give us $17,000 or we boot them out of the hotel. This is my con.
That's a confusing thing to listen to, just sort of casually. Like, I'm reading this E3 thing and, like, I'm hearing just con, con.
Con. Con. Con. Well, wake up, Con. Con, wake up.
The joke there was that it was going to talk about convention, but it's actually a con.
It's a con and a con.
Yes.
It's con, con. Yeah, it's
so that was ruined. Yeah, the Nitro Beard Con, where we invite everybody to meet Imran Khan, but it's really just a con.
Speaking of the only con that makes sense, Imran Khan.
I was gonna actually make the con joke, but now I got nothing. So something about peeing in a ball pit. I don't know. Tumblr is weird.
David Owen.
I got nothing. Sorry, peeing in a ball pit completely disarmed me. I'm sorry.
No, I could tell there for a minute. And Matt Pierce.
I think my favorite thing to come out of DashCon was the Photoshop of sad Keanu Reeves sitting on the edge of the ball pit.
The better one than that, sad Rand Paul sitting in an empty room beside the ball pit.
Sad Rand Paul sitting on sad Keanu Reeves sitting on the edge of a ball pit, and the ball pit is perched on the edge of a sad Keanu Reeves.
I think my favorite one is this one of Crom from Fire Emblem Awakening just sitting there alone, because it was announced that everyone else from Fire Emblem Awakening is in this game except him.
Oh, this is a real thing. All right, please explain to me about the ball pit, because I saw a picture of a ball pit.
You pay $65 to go to TumblrCon, which is DashCon, and then there's like their entertainment is just like a single ball pit.
Okay,
that somebody peed into.
Okay, and
this is something that actually happened.
You're missing a couple parts here.
Okay.
Number one. Okay, so they have DashCon, which is a TumblrCon, because apparently if you're going to have a bunch of Doctor Who people just meet at a con, you can't just go to a normal fucking comic book convention. Anyway, one of the big attracting points of this con was that the crew from the Night Vale podcast was going to show up. The people organizing the DashCon, the convention, didn't pay the people for Night Vale, and when they tried to pay by saying, listen, we have this money in a PayPal account. Look at this screenshot. The people from Night Vale Con said, fuck you, we're not attending. So in payments for these people who paid for the Night Vale panel, because you had to pay extra in order to get there. You're already paying your $65 ticket. You had to pay extra for the Night Vale Con. For payment, you got an extra hour inside the ball pit.
But the ball pit.
I don't know that they cleaned it. Like, I assume they did, but you never
know. I don't know how you clean a ball pit.
You take out the balls and you wash them individually, then hose the thing down.
You would have to do that every single time when the DashCon attendees.
Well, I mean, after somebody peed in it. Like, that's the delineating line there.
Is it really?
I feel like that's the important one. Like, that's the no going backwards one. Like, you can't just write that off as like, yeah, we can clean it later.
It'll just, you know, it's diluted enough. It's such a small portion. It's just like one part pee and 100 parts balls, so it's probably fine.
Okay. Now, it's important to note, one, the ball pit was an attraction inside a hall known as the Adventure Zone, which is going to have a ball pit and Quidditch, but you just had the ball
pit. You know, I would this, if this picture of what I'm seeing is true to form, it would be a stretch to call it a ball pit. It's more of a ball baby pool?
It's a kiddie pool with balls in it.
Jesus Christ.
And they weren't charging for the ball pit use before the Night Vale disaster happened. After that, and they realized the ball pit's all really we got for this entire fucking convention. We gotta make our money back somehow. They had to charge money for the ball pit.
Yeah. Dave and I don't have to go to a convention to see a kiddie pool with balls in it.
Or pee.
That's right.
Or pee. Maybe. Well, no, yeah, maybe. I can neither confirm nor deny if Parker peed into a hotel pool.
Now, I'm like nearly 40. Like, I grew up well before the whole ball pit phenomenon. I've never been inside a ball pit. Have any of you gentlemen been inside a ball pit?
Well, yes, because I've been to fast food restaurants as a kid.
And I went to Discovery Zone and Chuck E. Cheese.
I didn't have any of this crap. Is it appealing to go inside the ball pit? Because it seems like a nightmare.
Well, you got to understand the ball pit in a children's... Okay, in a children's play place. Because it should not be a thing on its own for adults.
Right.
But in a children's play place, it's usually at the bottom of a really tall slide so that there's something for kids to land into.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that's the whole point of it. It's not just there. It's supposed to be like a kind of fun cushion.
Well, that and a strange, confusing, but ultimately really cool photo of Patrick Stewart with like his face poking out of a ball pit. That's also the other purpose of
it. Was he with Ian McKellen?
Nope, I think it was just him.
That's weird.
Impossible.
They're always
impossible. Dead. Yeah.
He must be hiding in the ball pit somewhere.
Right. Who knows where Ian is?
So if they're like a mutant that's like Magneto but only had control over like ball pits, I think
like,
he would be
like not just not plastic.
I hate to
like,
tell you this, but there is one. His name is Gold Balls, and he's on the current X-Men roster.
No, wait. I don't believe you. I'm going to look this up.
Granted, he generates the balls.
Wait, is this spelled differently? Because I don't just want to look up Gold Balls.
Look up Gold Balls,
character.
Uncanny X-Men.
Comic Vine. he's a new mutant recruited in San Diego by Cyclops' revolutionary X-Men. His mutant power appears to revolve around strange bouncing balls that he expels from his body.
What?
It's also, there was also a character named Speedball back in the 80s.
I remember.
He was just on drugs. He didn't have any powers. He's just super high all the time.
He's named for a really expensive art pen.
Goldballs, his human name is Fabio.
Yes.
I feel like that's important in this case.
Oh man, Brian Michael Bendis wrote him. Isn't he the guy that did the whole like hour-long power segment in the Sony conference?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he was the only guy who showed up like in a suit.
He really hopes his mutant name doesn't become Goldballs.
Okay, that seems self-aware.
Yeah.
I'll forgive that.
Interesting. All right.
Is that really a mutant power?
Balls?
Sure.
If it's
a power that he attained through mutation, then yes, it is.
But it's not a mutation. It's just shit you do. It's not like something your DNA just produces like gold balls out of your chest infinitely. That's not something genes can do.
What, are you some sort of mutation expert?
Wow. If you're really gonna start worrying about that, now is not the time to look into X-Men.
This has actually bothered me about the X-Men for a while. A lot of the shit they do has absolutely nothing to do with like being this like I'm super fast or I've got like super healing or like I'm just an incredible fighter. No, it's just making balls appear out of your body is not a goddamn genetic deficiency. It's just shit you do. It's a superpower.
Well, I'm pretty sure they work from they start from what is this a superpower, then go to right, let's just call it a mutation.
Well, yeah, in the Marvel Universe, anything that's a mutation, or anything that makes you a mutant is just basically, you have superpowers, but we don't want to give you a real origin story. Like, we're going to make a character who has superpowers, but we're not going to, like, go through the trouble of having them have a contrived laboratory accident. It's like, you just grew up with this shit, whatever.
I'm just thinking of the laboratory accident that would result in the ability to create golden balls.
I don't want to talk about it.
It was at the Chuck E. Cheese testing facility.
Yeah,
obviously it would involve a ball pit. You're exactly right.
Okay, that would be a bit like he was a research and design guy for Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese, yeah.
And his arch nemesis can be a self-aware animatronic mouse
who plays a banjo.
Yes,
he set up the whole thing.
Kids are constantly running into him just by instinct. This guy generates ball pit balls. I got to run into it. I don't know why.
He's fueled by crappy pizza.
And tickets.
See, you could totally just write that 90s movie right now, because you know every, like, there'd be that big bank heist scene where he just rolls out a bunch of balls and they all fall over at Home Alone style.
No, but can you imagine, like, the super sad, like, the turning point where he's, like, down and beat out and he's running out of energy trying to save, and the bad guys are just whooping on him and kicking him his ass, and like, this kid he's befriended at some point, you know, he's like about to turn in 100 tickets for like a big Chuck E. Cheese doll. And then he turns around and he sees Gold Balls lying on the floor, getting beaten down. And Gold Balls reaches out to him and the kid comes up and gives him 100 tickets and that just supercharges him.
Just shoves him in his mouth.
Marvel?
Are you listening, Marvel?
So he's got to have like some sort of ticket receptacle, I guess.
He uses the tickets as like a lasso. You know, like the big spool of tickets.
No. This actually just fuels him. So he does need some sort of ticket receptor.
Well, I think
like
you just shove them in his mouth. Yeah,
like you just chews them one by one. It's like his gum or, you know, just like a bag of M&Ms. He just like, you know, pops tickets into his mouth. Mm.
And the kid becomes his sidekick, Ski Balls.
Yes. Oh, my God. Like maybe the kid actually just becomes a ball. It's like Sonic.
A human ball. I'm sure that exists too.
Did you? Yeah. I saw this video. It's probably pretty old, but I guess somebody like modded in Sonic into Ocarina of Time.
Okay.
Have you seen this video?
No.
Okay. Well, it's just a compilation of him. Like, so like he added in a dash. Like the Link's roll move or whatever maneuver is now a dash, and you can just do it in the cutscenes and stuff. So there's just back-to-back cutscenes of, like, you know, Sonic standing there, or Sonic in this case, you know, about to be, he's like, here, Sonic, take my ocarina. The guy just goes, nope, I'm too fast, and just zooms off into the fucking horizon. A lot of great moments like that. So gold balls. Anyone play any video games this week? I haven't played much.
Perhaps related, I've played a ton of Marvel Heroes.
Did you?
Yes, because I was like, I don't know why.
The free-to-play MMO.
Yeah, it's not... in terms of monetization, it's not too bad.
It's not offensive.
Do you feel like you need to spend money? Do you feel like you're missing out if you don't?
I feel like I'm getting a little bored of Rocket Raccoon. Okay. Because I've been playing him for 8 to 9 hours.
Oh.
But, like, it doesn't seem too difficult to get new characters. Like,
I forget why I stopped. I can't remember.
It can get a little rote because you're just going through place to place, like, oh, let's fight these guys and let's hunt down this boss.
Yeah.
You just
pick a different. I think one of the main things for me was like, okay, so there's like 100 Black Panther clones running around or whatever. Yeah. And so that was like, I was really hoping that I could just make my own superhero or something like that.
No, it's not City of Heroes.
No,
it's a Marvel game. They want you to identify with those brands.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a reason Rocket Raccoon's in there is so you identify with him and then go watch the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a 15 gig download. Is it worth my time to even download it?
I think it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
From what I've enjoyed. If you think 8 or 9 hours at least is going to be worth your 15 gig download, then yes.
Okay.
But, like, the only thing they really charge you for is costumes, I think, and new characters if you want to go that route. But you can also just, you know, gather energy shards, just drop like once every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's like, to get a character you want is about 400 energy shards, and you get like 200 through the story, and like every other one you have to pick up on your own.
Yeah.
So what's the starting rotation like? Is it just random or set?
I think it's set. Like, there's Rocket Raccoon, Black Widow, Hawkeye.
Black Panther,
Captain America. I think maybe Spider-Man.
No, because I probably would have picked Spider-Man if I could. Okay. I mean, he might be now. I think the starting roster has probably changed or something.
Yeah, but it's you can find somebody you like.
Yeah,
I've thought about it so many times, and every time I just kind of pull back at the, because I'm kind of to this critical mass on my game drive, and I'm like, God, I got to
play WildStar.
Yeah, that's
it's been a while.
Most space.
Started up WildStar. Yeah,
that's when we at this point we've paid to subscribe to it, so we have to play.
Yeah, we do, right? It's at that loop now.
Yep.
I think that's one of the things, reason I've been playing Marvel Heroes. It's like, I should play Final Fantasy X or 14 again. And I was like,
really?
Well,
should you?
I enjoyed it, and I also want to finish it. But I don't... One, I don't remember my password, so that's going to cause problems. Two, I don't want to pay money at this point. Like, I have other games. Maybe I should be playing those.
Only there was some sort of password resetting technology.
You don't know Square Enix, do you?
I don't actually, so maybe not.
Like, they reset your password, but you have to, like, actually email customer service.
Oh, man.
And, like, they'll get back to you in a couple of weeks.
That sounds heinous.
Yeah, so I feel like it might just make more sense for me to wait until I remember my password.
Yeah.
They'll set, like, divine intervention or some epiphany happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marvel Heroes is pretty, it's very Diablo-like, and I think it's coming through my mouse.
Yeah. I loaded it up and it is very Diablo. I played it with the guy I played City of Heroes with pretty much the whole time when I was playing that, and we played for like a couple weeks, and then and then stopped. Yeah.
My only issue is that, like, actually finding things, places you're supposed to go is, like, stupidly difficult. Like, it's just wander around in this area, and then maybe you'll discover it. Like, here's a... Everything looks exactly the same, which makes it difficult to actually find, like, have I been here before? I don't know. The map sort of reset when I came here, so...
The crafting system is sort of convoluted.
Obtuse, yeah.
Yeah. So...
I have a mission that's, like, go to Frank Pym... Or Frank Pym. Hank Pym.
Frank and, Pym.
Like, the other Ant-Man. And, like, have him craft this thing for you, and then, like, they never triggered the items to show up in my inventory. So, like, that side mission is just in my sidebar for, like, the rest of time.
Yeah. No, but, I mean, the combat system was pretty fun and fast-paced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to play somebody a little bit more active, because Rocket Raccoon does a lot of cool things, but most of his stuff is just, like, summoning Groot and, like, setting up turrets and just standing back while things fly.
So you summon Groot, you don't actually play as Groot?
No, you summon him, and it's, like, super broken, because he has, like, a cooldown of, like, 15 seconds, but he sticks around for, like, a minute 30.
Oh, cool.
So you summon him.
Can you summon multiple Groots?
No, but you can, once that one dies, you just immediately summon another one.
Yeah. Try Black Panther. He was pretty fun and definitely active clicky. So
yeah. I do like those situations where you end up just accidentally partnering with people and then you decide, all right, let's just hang out and take on this boss together.
Yeah.
Except one time I went with someone. Somebody said, like, oh, I've been having a really hard time with this boss. I'm like, okay, I'll come with you. So we did, and we got up to Kingpin, and he summons Elektra and Bullseye to help him, and that's what the guy was having trouble with. So I go there and accidentally I hit B on the keyboard, and apparently what the B key does is it warps you back to Avengers Tower, and I didn't realize I went in with the guy and then immediately just warped out.
Right. Meanwhile, like, the difficulty is scaled as such that it's for, you know, two people or whatever.
But I feel bad for him, even though
that's pretty bad. Yeah. Did you ever play the DC Universe Online?
I downloaded it, but I think I made one character, and it was like, then Batman asked me to do something, and I was like, I'm bored with this.
It was pretty good. I'd say that was better than Marvel Heroes Online.
And that was an actual MMO. It wasn't like a Diablo game, right?
Yeah, it was a subscription MMO at first, and then it went free.
Yeah, then it went free to play. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's on PS3 and PS4. I think it's on PS4 now.
Yeah, I got some good enjoyment out of that. But they will never beat City of Heroes.
Oh, let's talk about this, because I finished Far Cry 3. The end of that game is such stupid bullshit.
What happens at the end of Far Cry 3?
Like, the last 3 hours you go... So Voss dies. Okay. And then you go take on his boss. And everything from that point is all just terrible action sequences or terrible stealth sequences.
You see, it should end with Voss dying, because he's the interesting guy.
And, like, there's this big confrontation with Hoyt, and, like, then you have to run to an airport to save your brother. Then a big turret sequence...
With Flight of the Valkyries playing.
Yes, with Flight of the Valkyries playing. And then the ending gives you two options. Either one, you can murder all your friends.
Okay.
Or two, you cannot murder them.
Is there any in-game reason why you'd be given to murder all your friends?
Because you are Citra a Rakyat warrior now.
It is literally Citra says she will bang you if you murder them.
Yeah. But your girlfriend is there, right? So you can just... Like, continue your relationship with your girlfriend, who presumably, I don't want to judge, maybe I'm, like, being forward here, you're having sex with already?
I guess.
Jason Brody's hitting it, come on.
So if you choose the killing the thing, for one, it's a pretty graphic scene where you, like, slit Lisa's neck.
Yeah.
And then there's a first-person sex scene.
Right, just Citra boobs all up in your face.
Complete with, like, you know, you're banging Citra, and, like, there's complete orgasm sounds and everything.
Orgasm sounds.
And then she murders you. Like, for no reason. Like, it's never really explained why she murders you.
Because she's a woman and you can't trust her. That's what video games teach us. Yeah.
How did you like the power weapon vision quest?
Which one was that? The big boss fight?
No. I think I'm thinking of the same game. No, there's, like, this one part where you sort of go on this vision quest and, like, you know, you only pick up one weapon at a time and you're sort of attacked by zombies.
Oh, the boss thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all because I kept dying. I was like,
it was so weird.
This is not the gun I like or is anywhere near as good as my guns.
Right.
So why am I using
They were, like, buffed versions of the regular guns, I think. But even then, it was just, Also, that was sort of...
I don't understand why you went on that mission quest. Like, I guess Voss has the same powers as Syntra?
I don't know, man. Just everyone on that island was eating mushrooms.
And like, why would he put you on that even though you're clearly way better in vision mode?
Jesus Christ, vision mode.
Detective mode.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was weird.
So yeah, like, Far Cry 3 is a very good example of, like, the end of a game kind of ruining the rest of it. Because I didn't like that last island at all.
Yeah. Because
the enemies were too hard for that. I don't know. They were beautiful, but
basically
they were
just, like, Mercenary Island.
Yeah.
And everyone hated you.
It really felt like they thought, oh, this game is way too short. We need to put something in there. Because some people are just going to critical path it, and they'll be done in 3 hours.
We can't have that.
Far Cry 3 hours.
Yeah. So maybe they'll fix it. Like, they haven't... It's weird, because I never see anyone talk about that part. I never see anyone say, like, yeah, Far Cry 3 was really great up until the Hoyt part. Which is...
Maybe so few people actually wind up finishing that game, they just get lost freeing outposts and don't bother with the actual story part of the game.
My favorite part of that game is, at one point, Voss decides, okay, I'm just going to shoot Jason, and he only shoots him once. Which misses. And then he throws him into a mass grave. And Jason just comes out. And there's like a really dumb scene where you're like digging your way through bodies in the mass grave.
Press X to swim through bodies.
Yeah. And I don't know, Far Cry 3 is a really good island game and then a really bad everything else.
Right. It starts off as a great island game and then...
You know, it kind of... I never actually finished Far Cry 3, but I'm kind of reminded of Just Cause 2. Which is a super fun game. I mean, you're just creating chaos and just freeform through the entire way. But the story is just incomprehensible bullshit. And you don't really mind because you're having too much fun playing the video game. It seems like in Far Cry, they insist on just imposing the will of the story upon everything, as if the story is why you're playing this video game. No, we're playing these games because the open world is amazing. We don't care about the others. You're stupid... high school story bullshit. We don't care about that. No?
Yeah, I actually play poker and participate in the Island Racing League, okay?
God, that was so dumb at the end. You're playing poker against Hoyt and he knows that you're like trying to kill him. So like every prompt is bet your life. It's like you guys really thought this is way more lofty and significant than I think it is, right?
Alright, we've given Far Cry 3 enough time.
Have we?
Again. Maybe we haven't. Did you skin all the animals?
I did skin all the animals until I got tired of it.
Yeah.
Then it was like, no, this animation is way too long for this thing that doesn't give me enough benefit. I started Xenoblade the other day.
Yes, I saw that you started that and you have so far to go.
I am in Guara Plains and I'm looking for Sharla's brother.
Okay. Yeah, so, I guess you've already seen the mechanic where you have to use the shield to block critical events from happening.
Yeah, that happens really often, and that may be because I just got a healer in Sharla, but
yeah,
it seems like every time someone's about to die for any reason, it shows you that. It's like, okay, I understand this, but now there's like 7 enemies around me, and it would help if you guys didn't show me this every time, just let Ryan die.
Okay, so what you need to understand first... in order to refill that gauge that allows you to use the Monado, you have to let your character auto-attack. When you auto-attack, you fill that gauge. When you connect with those like critical hits, you fill the like party gauge that lets you do a combo. So you kind of have to decide whether you want to fill the party gauge or if you want to fill up the Monado.
Was that ever explained? Because I was wondering, like, why is the timing so weird on when the Monado activates?
I don't know if it's ever explained, to be honest. It's somewhere in the instruction manual. I ended up reading the instruction manual because I was so hopelessly lost. The other thing you have to understand is that when you target an enemy, one of the things you can choose is to lead the enemy away from the pack.
Yeah, I just discovered that today.
Yeah, that's almost like the number one important thing you have to learn when you, especially in Guar Plains, when you're heading north and you're trying to track down Sharla's brother. You end up facing some enemies that are, in a group, they're like impossible for you. But if you can get one or two Mechon away from the rest of the group, then you're okay.
I noticed there was some wolves that were just sort of hanging out near this level 80 thing called like territorial Rotbart or something.
Yeah.
And, like, that guy wrecked my shit when I approached him before. Because, like, I knew he was level 80. It's like, there's nothing I can do about that. But I was fighting something else before, and he just came up behind me and punched my brains out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You've got to be real, real aware of what's around you.
And it's good that there's no consequence whatsoever for death in that game, because otherwise that would be pretty annoying.
It seems that way until you get to an area where it's a long distance between checkpoints.
Hmm.
And then the consequence for death is having to go back to a checkpoint.
I will say I don't like that the armor, like the appearance changes with what armor you do, because that at some point that makes me start to prioritize or think about the difference between appearance and stats. So yeah. I'm like, well, this has better stats, but I don't like the way this looks at all.
Especially with Sharla, and if you play around other people, because there are a lot of outfits for Sharla where it's like, I swear to God, I'm not playing this as softcore porn. This is just the best armor I have for her at the moment. I didn't intend to put her in a bikini today.
Like, it's some, like, Shulk, like, his first helmet was, like, this really dumb knight-looking thing. I was like, I don't really want this, but he takes a huge hit to defense if I don't use it.
Yeah. It's always like that.
Mm.
At least at some point, you get armor that, the different armor that you have, each one has its different benefits and detractions.
Right.
So at least you can prioritize one thing over another, but...
They should really just have a toggle that, like, do I want armor to change appearance? Like, no.
That'd be nice.
I'm fine with just, like, the character designs looking like they do. Or make it per character so I can change someone and don't change others.
Yeah. What I'm actually coming across as a problem now, and I'm at level 50 or so, like, I never got into the gem crafting. And now I have a shitload of gems, and now I have no space left in my inventory for anything else. I guess I'm just going to have to throw them all out.
So I, like, early on I started to get into that, and I didn't understand her explanation at all, because it was like 5 pages of tutorials.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
So I had to ask Mike, and he's like, oh, I think it boils down to this. And Mike's finished the game, so yeah. He doesn't know.
Well, the long and short to gem crafting is when you're setting up, when you're picking gems... You'll see percentages of different attributes that those gems have. And once you get any of them over 100%, then you have to start crafting.
Okay.
Right? So your goal is to get, like, really close to 100% and then just, like, shove it way over the edge to, like, 180% if you can. And anything that's left over gets dumped into a cylinder that you can use for crafting later. And the big thing with crafting is that if you don't start it early, you end up with too many gems to handle, and your inventory gets all fucked up. But if you start it early, it's useless because you need affinity between your characters in order for them to craft things well. So until they're really good friends, it kind of sucks anyway. It's kind of like a weird catch-22. And then there's other things like the Collectopedia, which I'm at level 50 and I only found out about by reading Game Facts like a week ago. Collectopedia, you know all the like random things you pick up along the way?
Yeah.
You can sacrifice one of each of those things into the Collectopedia in order to like fill out basically this book that catalogs all the things you've found. And then once you like finish a page, you get some sort of bonus.
Speaking of, like, affinity, I've not, like, every single one of those heart-to-heart things, I've never figured out what those, like, because I'm like, oh, you can't view this yet. I'm like,
If it just says you can't view this yet, it means you don't have the characters that are involved.
Okay.
If it says that you haven't met the requirements and then it shows you, like, what characters, that means they have to be better friends or they have to be active. Like, right now you only have 3 people anyway, but at some point you have, like, 6 people in your party. And, like, you just have to make sure they're both in your 3-person team at the same time and like each other enough.
Okay.
But in order to raise people's affinity, you don't do it through the heart-to-hearts. You do it by having them fight in battles together.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It tends to go up when I'm encouraging them during battles and protecting them and stuff.
Yeah, when you're encouraging them, when you finish a battle, or when you do a side quest, like when you talk to somebody about their problems and... Even just accepting a quest will make them better friends.
Yeah. I like that when you take a quest and then you fulfill that quest, you don't actually have to go back to that person most of the time. Because that was the dumbest thing in Dragon Age 2, where you'll just find like random knickknacks and then you, like, you'll talk to somebody. It's like, oh, I guess this goes to this guy.
Yeah.
Well, even though I had no idea.
Load time is minimal. So at least when you do have to go back, it's not a big pain in the ass. The other thing you got to get used to is there's the relationship chart that charts how everybody in the entire game relates to everyone else in the entire game. But it also tells you when and where you can find them. So it'll say this person is active between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. in the Central Plaza in Colony 6.
This game seems super dense.
It is. It is incredibly dense. And the battle system only gets more dense. Like, my Monado right now has, I think, 7 different arts it can perform. And most of them are pointless to me most of the time because I'm not fighting Mechon.
Yeah. And when you're fighting Mechon, you just want to use the give everybody the ability to fight Mechon skill.
Yeah, you have to use that. And then you have to keep auto-attacking because you need to keep re-upping it.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, that's where that whole balance comes in. You also want to do the attacks that boost your party gauge because at some point you want to either use that for a chain attack or to revive party members when they fall. Like, it becomes a juggling act. But the best skill you can learn is getting good at luring enemies away from other enemies. And also figuring out how to use the map to warp between places. Like, there's this point in one of the other later levels where I was just warping from one place to another to get more enemies to spawn so I could grind.
Yeah, I ended up doing that with bats earlier today outside Colony 9.
Yeah, efficient grinding is, like, the key to that game.
Yeah. So I also watched Evo this past weekend.
Yay. I've never watched Evo. I've never been interested.
I'm getting less and less interested every year. But this year it was Ultra Street Fighter 4 came out, and I guess this is going to be the last year on these consoles, depending on what comes out on them next time. So, I don't know. The BlazBlue finals were actually, like, the most interesting one, because it went down to somebody was in loser's bracket, and they reset the bracket, then it came down to the very final round, and, like, a hair's breadth of HP left, and then he managed to win. And, like, the dude was crying at the end.
That's cool.
Yeah.
The finals for Street Fighter 4 were really interesting this year.
Yeah. Zangief that was probably the most patient man I've ever seen in the world.
Well, all the former champions were just completely eliminated, like, in the first day.
Yeah.
So everybody that showed up in the top 8, which is, I'm sure, like, if you followed Evo the entire year, you'd know who these people were. But as someone who basically only watches for, like, Evo, which makes me terrible, I didn't hear of any of these people.
There was Fudo, who was the champion, I think, 2 years ago.
Yeah, there was Fudo, you're right.
But he got knocked out.
Yeah. He made it to the final 8, though.
Yeah.
But no, it was interesting, bunch of interesting characters. I mean, the person who won using Rose, using a PlayStation 1 controller. I don't know how you get a PlayStation 1 controller working on a PlayStation 3 to begin with, but this guy managed to make all that work. And like you were saying, that the Snake Eyes, the guy using Zangief, was just an incredible player of video games. I don't the stuff he was doing. He went like one round for like 40 seconds without pressing a single attack button, just constantly dancing around his opponent.
Like, that was the kind of thing where, like, I look at that and I know that there's the wall between me and ever being, like, that amazing at fighting games, because the execution on those things, just, that's not practice. That's pure innate ability.
It's pure muscle memory. I mean, like a normal player like you or myself, we may be lucky to get, like, a fireball off 9 times out of 10. I still miss it. They're doing it 99 times out of 100. You know, Even at that, it's like, these guys are the top 1% of the top 1% of the people in the world. Like, these are literally the 8 best players of this game in the entire world. And we know that because the person who won was from fucking France. A dude came from France to play this video game and defeat everyone, including people from Korea and Singapore and Japan and America.
Like, the craziest thing, like, there was a time where in the final matches, it was Sagat and Rose, and one of the things, like, Rose released her Ultra, and the Sagat had already started his counterattack.
Yeah, so, like a fraction of a second between the fireball hitting her.
Yeah, like he was by all rights, he should have been hit by that fireball, but he managed to get a reflect off right in time, long enough to like put it back in his face.
Like in a frame, he had to have got that off within the frame necessary to get the soul reflect off.
Yeah,
and it worked. I mean, it was kind of anticlimactic in that once the guy who won it, his name's Luffy, once he finally decided he had enough shit, he basically just tore through the entire thing. I mean, watching him operate was amazing, but it was also like just watching the most dominant NBA player of all time just completely crush everyone. And it's like, I appreciate the artistry, but my God, this is so crushing. I'm glad I like this person. Otherwise, I'd really hate the result. And, you know, Just glad that it wasn't Jay Wong or Chris G or some other scumbag.
That's actually why I got bored watching the Marvel and just started playing something else.
Yeah.
Like, Marvel is so rote and boring now. Like, it's just all the same characters and all the same strategies.
It really is. And it's not even that. It's like if the strategies would be interesting, that would be something else. It's like watching that Sagat and that Rose and that Zangief play, even the guys who are like weirdly overpowered. The Bruce Lee guy, I keep forgetting his name.
Fei Long.
Even watching him was interesting because of the stuff he was doing. The stuff in Marvel is incomprehensible because it's just a bunch of projectiles flying around. I have no idea how you're supposed to, one, know you're hitting someone, or two, avoid being hit. It just seems like there's a bunch of flailing going around. Once a combo gets started, you just wait 30 seconds and for the guy to die.
There was one really, like, Filipino champ was playing a Magneto team versus a Hagger team, and he kept using Magneto's, like, push-away thing just to taunt the guy, because apparently Filipino champ, who is a huge dick, mm-hmm. wants to just embarrass all Hagar players because he doesn't like fighting them. Mm. So he wants to make sure that, like, nobody plays Hagar against him.
Great.
Which is like, wow, that's apparently they're actual assholes in
pretty much
fighting tournaments.
It doesn't help that Marvel was by far the most popular tournament there, if you just go by Twitch TV viewership.
Yeah, Smash Brothers is really popular too, and Nintendo actually sponsored it this year and was like, hey, you guys are playing this game, maybe play the new one.
Yeah. And they're playing the N64 version of Smash this year, right?
The GameCube.
GameCube? Oh, yeah, the GameCube version.
Yeah.
That's right. I guess they don't like the Wii version because of the tripping shit, I guess, right?
I think that's one of the main reasons. Like, it just doesn't feel better to them. I don't know, competitive Smash stuff.
Speaking of watching people play games, I watched the Omega Jam, which is a documentary from Devolver Digital Films about game development. It was the jam where Alex Austin of Cryptic Sea got together and brought a bunch of people together. It's not really a game jam, so it was kind of a poor choice of names, and even he says that in the movie itself. But it's only about 15, 18 minutes long. But it's the jam that he put together that took place in the Double Fine space where Double Fine discovered Escape Goat 2 and went on to publish it, which we, Brian and I, of course, talked to Ian about a little bit, Ian Stalker, when we interviewed him a month or two ago.
Oh, cool. It looks like it has Overgrowth, which is by Wolfire Games.
Yeah.
And they're doing some crazy stuff. Like, I don't know. Have you ever watched the development videos for Overgrowth?
Yeah, there's some great stuff in
this. Is it David Rosen, I think,
David
is the guy?
Rosen. Yeah, I think Jared is the Humble Bundle guy, and David is the...
Yeah, he's just got such a soothing voice. He's always just like, hey, I'm David Rosen.
And it's great. Like, it's like I said, maybe 16 minutes long, but it's absolutely wonderful. And, you know, it's one of those things that just gives you this glimpse inside to this game development scene that isn't glamorous. You know, these guys are in the movie. They're talking about, like, hey, sometimes I get depressed. And Alex is as much saying that when he even came up with the idea for the jam. He's like, you know, I develop alone most of the time, and I kind of wanted to be around other people, so I had this idea. And it had Tim Keenan from Misfits Attic, who, of course, we will be playing A Virus Named Tom for next week. It just seemed topical, so I fired it up. And it's really great. I highly recommend it. I'm not sure how much it costs because I got it in a bundle.
I'd see on the Devolver Digital site, it says purchase from $1.95.
Okay.
So I guess you can buy... So you can stream it / rent it for $1.95, or you can buy it and download it for $4.
Yeah. I know you're saying, like, the guy who was developing with the one guy they interviewed, you say he usually develops alone. Was this a situation where like it was mainly like just lone like independent game developers, or like did anyone have a studio associated with them?
Yeah, not really. I mean, it was there was Brad Johnson, who made a war games, like an actual officially licensed war games. Apparently he knew somebody who got him the license, mobile game, and he actually talked pretty in depth about, you know, being a lone developer. You know, Ian Stocker is working with Randy O'Connor, who was his art guy, but otherwise Ian would be working completely alone, and David Rosen's pretty much working alone, and Alex Austin. So it was really it kind of a theme emerged from the movie. It was kind of like, let's just watch these guys talk about games and make games. But as they started doing their interviews, other people would pop in and say, oh, you were talking about depression, and you know, we released this game and it ended up being kind of successful, but I had this huge post-launch depression and it was really affecting. And it was really like a cool, honest look at how some of these guys deal with the stuff, and that it's not glamorous. Because I think Tim has a line in it where he basically says, you know, everyone thinks we're developing games, we're doing what we want, we should just stop crying. But you know, it's a big deal and it's a big problem. So it was cool to see, but then also kind of sober. Like, just at the end, like just to pop you up and say, okay, yeah, these guys.
Have you seen any of Super Game Jam, which is also published by Devolver? And that's the one you can actually, I think you can actually buy it on Steam. But yeah. That's like six, I think, like half hour long episodes, maybe longer. Yeah. I don't know.
It's on the list. Yeah, it looks really great.
I need to, you talking about this, I think it's going to make me pull the trigger on Omega Jam and also probably Super Game Jam too.
It's an interesting note, like the game developers dealing with depression, and we often make the joke about, oh, games trying to be art, or like people demanding that games be art, but this actually is an artistic effort for these developers. It's, I mean, every developer tries to create some sort of artistic expression their own way. This is a very direct artistic expression for them, not filtered by any form of like corporate like design doc or like focus groups. So when they talk about depression, they're actually talking about the depression like a writer would face or a painter would face.
Absolutely.
The artist is even if their medium is video games.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the funny effect that this had on me was one of the guys that's in the documentary, Justin Woodward, he's from IntraBang. And they literally just released a game 2 days ago on Steam called Super Combo Man. And it's, you know, you're seeing the development, and he's talking about they've been working on this game for 3 years.
It's an Adult Swim game, I believe. Now.
Yeah, it's published by Adult Swim. And, you know, so it got me invested in the game. So I started thinking about, you know, maybe purchasing it or covering it. And I started looking at reviews, and it's just like everybody's just panning it as mediocre. And I'm just like, my heart is breaking because I know how much this guy put into it. And, you know, all of a sudden I can feel what, certainly not what he must feel like, but some measure, some small degree of what this poor guy must feel like who put 3 years of his life into a game, and everybody's just like, the controls are bad and the art is good, but it's cheesy and just ripping it apart. It's like, oh, just heartbreaking.
Don't read the comments.
Pretty much. But yeah, that's it for me. Other than actually playing Alex Austin's Skate or Don't.
Oh, cool! Did you see? So you got the whatever that pack was called.
Cryptic CEP.
CEP. Yeah, that's cool.
I only got to Skate or Don't.
Skate looks pretty good. Yeah. That also include the the rally racer game?
Yeah, the touring car championships it's called. Yeah, and the puzzle game, which is really interesting. I played like 2 seconds of it. It's like Tetris, but the pieces.
With physics, right?
Yeah, it's like they're made of jelly. So you can move them around, like aftertouch on all the pieces. So you move them around and they can kind of contort and conform a little bit. And they sort of wibble and wobble and they bounce off of each other in weird ways. It's just really freaky.
Have you played either a New Zero or in you know, the very, very early form that he's put out, or Sub Rosa?
No, neither one of those.
We should do that. Sub Rosa is multiplayer, and it involves like you know, hitmen in suits making deals, and like sometimes the deals goes wrong, and people get their head shot, and there's cars and stuff, and it looks really cool. And it's something I've been meaning to play more of. I played it once or twice a very long time ago when he first put it out, because I don't know, I wanted some reason to say, hey, that's great, but could you also finish Golf? Because that would be super cool, buddy. No, so
Always comes back to golf question mark.
It always does for me. I really want to see that game come out. It's so good. It's so good.
Just be happy with what you have and just enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, Vertiginous Golf is getting better and better. They've been putting out some new courses for it, which I've been enjoying. They've been putting out like because the game, like the tutorial, you can putt or you can also kind of chip the ball as well. But they've been putting out like strictly like mini golf, you know, putt courses, which have been really cool and are more a little easier for my son to play slash help play. So, yeah. So I've been playing that, I guess. And I don't know if Dave, if you got anything else you wanted to.
I got nothing.
Yeah. No, I've been playing Vertiginous Golf, checking out the new like course. I think there was also maybe one other new hole. And not much past that. I haven't delved enough into Divinity Original Sin, which, by the way, Mr. Mark Bradshaw, the yes, generous man, gifted to me. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, man.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
You know enough for us.
Yeah. What?
The game looks awesome.
Yeah, it's super beautiful. The music is super good.
Have you killed any drunks?
Have I? No.
Like in the video game, not in...
I mean, video game too.
Oh, right, the video game. Yeah. No, I have not yet. Like I said, it's still very, very early. Like I'm just going through the tutorial and just kind of just touching, dipping my toes into the kind of the different classes that there are. But this is going to be a game I'm going to be playing for a long time to come. Like they're going to be releasing campaign tools, you know, so you can, you know, kind of make your own D&D campaigns ostensibly. And yeah, it's two player, the campaign is two player co-op, or you can play it as one person controlling two people. But the campaign is made for two people. But from what I understand, any like third party campaigns or extra campaigns can be up to, I think, four person co-op. But it's good. It's from what I've played so far, it's good, but I don't want to talk about it too much because I haven't put enough time into it. So I don't really have a lot that I can say other than it's pretty, the music is good and I like it.
Have you played any other Divinity games?
I haven't. This is the first one I have. They've always, No. Because
there was one on sale on Steam, and it was like about dragons, and like it was.
Oh, modern... right, they're like dragons and like
Dragon Commander,
and they're pilots. Yeah,
sure, but like I don't understand what that series is. It the same universe?
I don't know. I really don't.
Like, do I need to play another Divinity game before I play like Original Sin or whatever that is?
I don't know. I always remember joking about like the games. Like, this game is called Divine Divinity. What are you doing? Stop it.
Oh, it's Divinity, but it's really super, super, super awesome Divinity. So yeah. It's Divine Divinity.
I don't know.
God, basically.
I'm glad they put this game out because it seems like maybe what they've wanted to do the whole time, and then they kind of had the ability to do it with them with Kickstarter because it was a Kickstarter game.
What? Dragons?
Probably. I'm almost 90% sure there's probably a dragon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then maybe same universe.
Yeah. So I don't know if anyone else has it, but I don't know. I'm looking for someone to co-op through it with. So because my brother and our friend Steve, they got it early, and I was like, oh, I don't want to. I just bought all the stuff in Steam Star or Steam Sale, and I just got a new car. Probably shouldn't buy it for myself yet. And so, yeah, I got a new car. My What'd old one was on. I'm not gonna say.
Are you that Why guy not? That crashed that Tesla into that sign?
No, I was not there. I was definitely on vacation at that point in time, and I'm sticking to it.
Brian, did you buy like a 1973 Chevette? That's fine if you did. That's not. There's nothing to be embarrassed.
No. I got a Kia Optima.
That's a fine, respectable car.
It's a damn nice car.
I also own a Kia Optima.
No, don't thumbs up. Down. Wait, oh, you do?
I do. Thumbs up.
Yeah, it's rad. I like it. It was a long time overdue. But anyway, so I didn't feel like I wanted to pull the trigger on it just yet. And then yeah, and then Mark was super generous because I had mentioned it, and so I need to return the favor to Mark now. I
feel like you did ask me first to buy it for you, but you thought I was your brother.
I did. That's right. I was.
Wait a minute. That's what he did to me.
No, it's funny. I was like, Adam, buy me divine divinity or original sin, and then everyone was like, what? I was like, oh, I just got my bed. Because my brother's Mr. Moneybag, so I always ask him to buy me things. But anyways, I like it. If you've bought it recently, let me know and maybe we can co-op it or something. Or maybe one of you should, so.
I don't know. I'm too busy playing Marlo Briggs and the Mask of Death.
Mario Briggs, never
Marlo heard. Briggs.
All right, so yeah. So that's me, pretty much. I haven't been playing much else. Tor Bash, come play Tor Bash.
I did play with you once, and I recorded it, but you were talking so quietly because I guess Parker was asleep. That it, like, the video.
Oh, really? Kinda, yeah. It usually still comes through okay.
It comes through. I heard you fine from, like, here, but the recording didn't pick it up quite well. So it's basically just me talking to myself with, like, blah, 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 blah. Like, yeah, that's funny, Belita.
So just, like, God, what game was it? Were we playing Nidhogg? that happened in? Was it Nidhogg? Yeah, it was Nidhogg, yeah.
Like, we were streaming it, but it was only me.
Yeah, that was weird. No, it's not just the fact that, like, I'm talking a little softly, but it's also that... It, like, I don't know, like, my whole speaking demeanor changes because I am trying to be quiet and speak in, like, shorter sentences and stuff like that.
It took us, like, an hour for you to get that Assassin's Creed jump going.
Oh, my God. It was so... I figured out how to, like, mod. Like, you can change the turn time and stuff like that now. So Mark, myself, and Amphetamine for the platforms. And was that it? Was there someone? No, I think it was just us.
No, that was it. That's just us, yeah.
Yeah. We found this one level that it's just called, like, Empire State Building, and you it's like a tiered pillar. Like, the first pillar is very thin, like just big enough for two people to stand on top of in Tor Bash, and then, you know, like 500 or, like, I don't know, 100 feet below that, there's,
you're guaranteed to fall off this stupid little tiny little platform.
No, we found out that that's not true. So you start on the top of this, and it's sort of a game of balance initially, or trying to take the other person down with you. But you can, like, activate your hand to be in grab mode, and you can grab the side of the building. So you have these moments, or another moment where, you know, before I could do that, Mark grabbed my hands and pulled me backwards. So I stuck my legs out, and we were hanging off the edge of the building by my toes. and then I was just like, and I just said, fuck it. And I just, like, flung my legs back, and we fell down, and you just land and disintegrate into a billion, you know, Tor Bash joints. And so that one initially was, like, only a 10 frame turn time, and, like, it would just take forever for anything to happen in that. So it's like, all right, we'll just bump it up to, like, a 300 frame turn time, which makes you kind of have to predict what's going to happen, and commit to something more. Cause, you know, you kind of do your motion, and then there's, you know, a 100 frames or so, or 200 frames or so of you in that position now just falling, or, you know, grabbing the other guy and pulling him in a different direction. So it's really fun. Y'all should play it more with us.
Is there Steam Workshop on that, or is it all, like...
It's all just in-game. No, okay. Yeah, I mean, no. I mean, the only stuff you can buy is aesthetic.
I wanted to put, like, a Captain Falcon hat on somebody.
Oh, man, that would be cool if you could do that, but it's probably not in there.
And you have to buy it anyway if you did, so...
Right, exactly. So anyway, that's me. I don't know who else is next.
So I dug my Dreamcast out of storage, which has been kind of a bit of fun. One of the things I forgot is that the Dreamcast era is where they started putting advertisements for other games in the back of the instruction manual. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of advertisements for games that didn't quite make it, like Confidential Mission.
They came out.
You know, they came out, but it's like, I forgot this game existed. And I found out that Daytona USA on the Dreamcast is not really all that good. It has a lot of really stupid things it does that it really shouldn't do. Like, it locks you to the road if you're essentially going straight. But that means, like, setting up for a turn is impossible.
Yeah, so can you even drift in that game? Or
you can. It's just ridiculously unpredictable.
It's important to note that that version of Daytona USA was not made by Sega for some weird reason, and we actually never got, like, a proper Daytona or a Daytona USA 2 for the Dreamcast at all, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, the closest we ever got to, like, a home version of Daytona USA that was actually made properly was, what, Championship Circuit Edition on the Saturn?
There was a version, I think it was that, but there was another one called, like, NetLink Edition. It was actually decent. I think the Championship Edition was basically NetLink Edition, or, like, NetLink Edition was Championship Edition with, like, NetLink stuff put inside of it. But yeah, along those lines. It still looked bad because it was the Sega Saturn trying to do, like, really complicated 3D effects, but it was fast and played well.
But really, it was complicated 3D effects, like drawing stuff.
and glass or any kind of, you're trying to do any kind of transparency on the Saturn, it looked horrible because it really couldn't do it. But yeah, that was basically the best they ever did for that. But the Dreamcast did have a very good version of Sega Rally 2, and probably the best Sega Rally 2 that was ever made.
So Sega Rally 2, I don't know what your rose-colored glasses are on this one, but like one of the things that's weird about it is that it doesn't run at 60 frames per second. It like dips in and out of 60 and 30.
Okay.
And it's one of these things where, yeah, it does that because it's one of the few Dreamcast games that's actually in Windows CE.
Huh. Okay.
Like it's not just done natively. It's in Windows CE because it has network code.
Okay.
Like because you could play online, they found it easier to just have Windows running in the background to handle the network stuff.
Apparently, all Dreamcast games were supposed to run on Windows CE at the start, but they quickly dumped that crap because what you're talking about, it basically just kills performance.
Yeah, well, it did okay for a Windows CE game. Mm-hmm. Like it's certainly more impressive than Choo Choo Rocket, but not by a lot.
Keep talking really good things about Choo Choo Rocket. I was disappointed I never actually got hold of it back in the day. But
there's an iOS version, I think.
It's a fun game, but you just, I forget what it, you just set up like arrows on the board, and then the mice walk like lemmings, and you have to get them into the rocket so that they don't get eaten by the cat. It had a really catchy theme song. Other than that, I don't remember much about it.
I mean, that's basically it. It was not a game that even today you'd expect to be bigger than like an iOS game.
Yeah. I don't remember why it was notable.
Because of the Japanese commercial?
No, there was something about it that made it worth buying, and I think it
had online play, I believe, or online level, I think.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no, it was because that came with the browser disc.
Oh, right, yeah.
So if you wanted to have your web browser on the Dreamcast, you needed to get Choo Choo Rocket, which is hilarious because that browser never worked right at all.
Also, I believe it was one of these games that had an unreasonable amount of hardcore credibility back in the day, almost entirely because like games like Game Fan Magazine would talk about it in glowing reviews.
It was fun, and if I got a review copy I didn't have to pay for, that would be totally worth it. That was always the caveat with a lot of those game magazines. As long as they were getting free review copies, there were a lot of games that they loved that nobody else would willingly pay money for.
You wouldn't download a magazine.
I can download a magazine. It's really easy.
I would download a magazine, yeah.
Yeah.
But then what am I going to do with that box of Nintendo Powers and Ultra Game Players?
What am I going to do with that pizza? You're going to upload it. You can upload it and sell it.
Okay. But then people would download my magazines.
Well, that's a risk you're going to have to take.
Well, I just have to trust that no one would.
So the only other two games I played out of the Dreamcast lineup this week, Virtua Fighter 3TB, which is not nearly as good looking as I remember. It's okay for the Dreamcast, I guess.
Well, you have to think, considering what people were dealing with before this, it's like they're dealing with like N64 graphics and PlayStation 1 graphics. So at the time, it looked amazing. All the first generation Dreamcast stuff looked amazing. And it's probably overhyped because there is such a huge leap in there.
Oh, yeah.
Probably like the last great leap, like last really noticeable leap that was ever we may ever see again. So that's why.
I mean, nothing really looked great until Soul Calibur, I think.
Yeah, Soul Calibur was the revolutionary one.
The actual levels in Sonic Adventure look very nice. That stupid plaza thing looks like an N64 game. But the levels were fun. They look good. But the only other game I played after that was Sega GT. And Sega GT it was supposed to be their answer to Gran Turismo 2.
Yeah.
And it is a hilarious mockery of the concept of video game physics. It's ridiculously how bad it is.
Well, they had a lot of really weird mechanics in that game. And number one, the handling model is just, it's pure like Sega Arcade. There was like no attempt to do anything sim-like. But they also tried to put a damage model in the game. And they had the same issue where they really couldn't, same issue as like Gran Turismo, where the the engine or like the licenses prevent actual damage. So there would be like a damage meter like on your car. So if like you hurt the if you damage like your bumper, then your bumper like on the meter would start flashing in your HUD.
And that's I would assume that
you had to repair it in the game.
The limited Dreamcast power also contributed to that. Because it's not like you could really do all that much damage modeling on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, I mean, they could maybe like have stuff fly off, but they ran into the same issue of like Gran Turismo, but they still wanted to have damage for some reason, I guess, to give it more credibility, despite the fact it was clearly an arcade game.
Yeah. Well, the problem I ran into with it is that it's an incredibly difficult game, and not because it's a hard game. It's an incredibly difficult game because it's extremely stingy with the prize money. Mm-hmm. So, like, the only car you can possibly afford to compete in some sort of series can't even remotely keep up with the other cars in the series. So you're like, putting along, making $100 a race until you save up $5,000 to get your first engine upgrade.
Well, keep in mind that $100 a race is being fed into, like, repairs at the end of the race if you don't race perfectly.
Yeah.
Or if you buy, like, because you can buy, like, new parts or a used part. And, of course, the used part, if you drive it for, like, a race, is going to explode and do more damage to your car. So.
But, yeah. That at least it still looks good. That's one of those games where it's like, that genuinely looks better than Gran Turismo 2.
The thing that always pissed me off about that was that, number one, it wasn't great. And number two, I always got the feeling because they spent so much time on that, we never got, like, a good version, any version, rather, of, like, a Scud Race or, like, any of the latter, like, Model 2 racers. I think they threw so much into that and think, oh, people are not going to really want our arcade games anymore. Even though we just released the system that can finally do a really good version of all these arcade games, we're just going to throw it into Sega GT. People like this instead, super frustrating.
What's really depressing is seeing how many Sega games have come out in the last few years in the arcade for Lindbergh and Lindbergh variants. And Lindbergh is just a Pentium 4. Yep. And it's not exactly a high-end PC. It's a Pentium 4 with some sort of GeForce that was pretty good in like the mid 2000s.
Yeah, it's on par with the 360.
Yeah, it's not gonna blow anybody's mind. But all of those games are basically running on Linux on a PC and could have been easily ported to Windows at any point. They just didn't.
Like, a few of them wound up showing up later on. Like, they released a version of Outrun on Lindbergh that was really good that showed up on Xbox Live Arcade. There was a version of Afterburner that was outstanding that showed up later. But that was basically it.
Yeah.
And it's just really sad that Sega kind of had this little arcade renaissance going on that was completely untouched. And they just completely ignored, like, most of the Model 2 library, the entirety of the Model 3 library, and the Model 1 and Model 2 stuff that they did looked like garbage because they had to show it on a Saturn, which really couldn't do a great job of it.
But, yeah, that was my week. I had some fun with that. I don't know. I probably have a few more games left to go through before I pack it away again.
I don't even know if mine's still working. Last time I played it, it took like a minute to load a fight in Soul Calibur, so...
That's yeah, I had that problem too, and my CD drive seems to have healed itself.
Huh.
I don't get it at all. Like, I had to, like, keep my Dreamcast upside down. But I had to keep my Dreamcast upside down in order to put pressure on the CD drive in order for Shenmue to work at all.
I remember doing that with my PlayStation.
PlayStation 1. You're scratching your discs. Don't do that. You're pushing the lens against the disc when you do that. Don't do that.
It's mostly a heat thing that was the cause of the PS1 problem. Yeah. Because the vents were at the bottom for some reason, which didn't make a whole lot of sense because heat rises.
Discrete error.
Yep.
I don't know. My Dreamcast sat alone for a long time, and now it seems to be okay.
Maybe some elves are, like, retired from Sega and just going around fixing Dreamcast CD drives.
Maybe I just knocked it into place somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
It's the magic of Sega. Just that's all they can really get, really. They can't, like, stay in business, but, like, the consoles had minor magical powers. It's a horrible trade-off.
I'm going to give it credit for being 15 years old and still running.
Yeah,
and that's not so bad.
Mm-mm.
It's mine, not a whole lot to it. It's just that, like, a disk drive and a motherboard. There's not a whole lot in there.
I wonder when we get to the point where, like, the Retron starts doing disk-based systems.
Oh, man.
Because I'm actually more interested in that, because I don't know where most of my cards are.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, video games.
.com.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's wrap.
Let's wrap it.
That was the signal, Brian. Jeez.
Oh, did I miss it? Did I miss the signal? I'm getting
it. Yeah, now we got to go for another 2 hours.
Episode. I missed one episode, and now I forget everything. How do I do this? Good night, everybody. Next week, we'll be talking about a virus named Tom, which was Dave's pick for a Little Witch Book Club. And, that was the cue for everyone to join it. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.